Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Well, the phrase of today is Glory McIljoy, and that's the headline, brilliant headline in the Irish Sun. But one person who knew Rory before there was much glory, in fact, he knew him when he was 9 years of age, if not before, was the legendary Irish broadcaster, TV, radio, and former GA star, and former journo, and well-known golfer. Tis yourself, Gerry Kelly.
Didn't recognise myself there, Joe. Did not recognise myself.
How are you keeping, old pal? Are you well?
I'm exhausted, Joe. I'm exhausted. Okay. I sat up to the bitter end last night, or to the sweet end last night, watching Rory. I sat there until the last tear drop fell, wow, and I went off to bed a very happy man indeed.
Brilliant. Now, do you remember, Gerry, the year is 1999.
Yeah, it is. It's November 1999.
Okay. How did a nine-year-old boy, Rory McIljoy, Glory McIljoy, how did he end up on your TV programme on a Saturday night past his bedtime?
Well, it started, I had heard that this young nine-year-old from Hollywood was a bit of a prodigy.
Okay.
And he had just won the World Under 10 Championships in Florida. Okay. Right. Now, Tiger had won that at the same age.
Okay.
So we thought, this young guy's rather special. So we went down to speak to his mum and dad. They lived in Hollywood, just outside Belfast. And we were talking to him, and she said, yes, he's a great golfer and so on. And I said to him, well, it's in the middle of November. He comes home from school at 3 or half 3. It's dark outside. He can't get much practice in the wintertime.
Yeah.
She said, well, what we do is we actually open the door of the kitchen,
right.
We open the door of the washing machine, and he chips down the hallway from the carpet into the washing machine.
Brilliant.
So
brilliant.
I could imagine this, and I thought, that's really a fabulous idea. So we recreated the whole thing in the studio the following Friday, and we invited young Rory on, and we asked him to chip into the washing machine.
And here is
and
part.
He missed the first time.
Okay. That was
and
nerves.
Then just kept putting them in ball.
That was
after
nerves
ball
as,
after
he,
ball.
As he stood in the shadow of a legend.
Probably.
Here's a clip from that legendary piece.
When you can't get out when the weather's really bad, I know that you practice in the house, don't you?
Yes.
And tell us how you practice in the house. How do you do it? It's not putting your practice, you're practicing pitching now, so how do you do it?
I chip air balls into my mum's washing machine.
Along the hall, in through the kitchen door, into your mum's washing machine.
Yes.
And then he was a lovely little boy, wasn't he? Even, and he still is a lovely man now, 25-30 years later. Do you remember you must have been impressed, and were you impressed with little Rory himself and his family?
The family, yes, his mum, his dad, and his mum were in the audience that night. And he was a very respectful young man. He was calling me Mr. Kelly this and Mr. Kelly that.
Okay.
And his dad had won a medal at, because his dad was a good golfer himself, but he couldn't get to the presentation of his medal because they had to come to the studio that night. Uh-huh. So we got the medal, and Rory presented his father with his medal that night. So, but his upbringing, it's a huge golfing family, uncles and all there.
Yeah.
So he was well brought up. And I think if you're brought up in the game of golf, because it's a game that demands respect and a lot of personal qualities, and I think that's what he grew up in, and that's the young man that he has now become, a very eloquent, speaks the truth. And he does give you that feel that he's he's still the boy next door, even though he's a megastar. But he's loved the world over, and I think it's that honesty. He wears his heart on his sleeve.
And when you think of the roar he got from the crowd, the American crowd, and it can be a difficult. He got an incredible reception,
unbelievable, especially when he was playing against DeChambeau, who was the American favorite. I was worried all night, Joe, in case it didn't happen, because if he didn't win it last night, this was his 11th attempt. His reputation would have suffered dramatically. He would have been known as the guy who nearly was.
Yeah.
And that would have been unfair for his talents. But I was frightened in case he would lose it. And there was a time during the night when I thought,
I know. And the 18th there, the missed putt.
That chip off. Yeah. He had a perfect drive up the 18th. And I had a wedge in his hand and missed the green. And you're going, oh, no, Rory. But to show his bounce-back ability, which is a phrase now used, he went back out there and buried that hole. But it was the raw emotion, Joe, at the end, I think, that I'll remember most. It just lifted an 11-year mm-hmm. burden off his shoulders. And the tears, they were genuine, of relief, I think, and certainly of joy.
And again, he obviously teared up when he was talking about Poppy and his wife. Dad, teared when he was talking about his mom. His father was... When I was reading about him this morning, his mother worked night shifts in a factory. His father was a barman in the golf club. Funnily enough,
Hollywood Golf Club,
and a very hard-working with barman shifts, as you know, Jerry. I know from relatives in the family. What's the song they used to sing about the barman? My daddy's a barman and he never comes home because they're on shifts and they come home at 3 o'clock for 2 hours and then they're back in. So they're extraordinarily. It is a great story. It really is a great story.
They gave up everything for him, Joe. They gave up everything for him. But he appreciates that. He now knows what they did. And being a father himself now, he knows what it means to be a father. And he now recognises very strongly what his mum and dad did for him.
And were you proud of him, Jerry, on the principal stand he took on the whole money, the whole live split? And he took a very strong stand, didn't he?
Well, to be honest, Joe, I was disappointed. I thought, just shut up, Rory. You know,
why?
He took too much on. He became the spokesman for the, there was a major split, and he was giving off so much about the live players that I thought they'll never get back together. Yeah. And he was totally preoccupied with the politics of sport and the politics of golf, that his own golf suffered. And it was only when he gave it up, I think, in the past 12, 18 months, like, look what he's achieved in that, when he wasn't distracted. Because golf is one of the most selfish games that you can play. You have to think of you and you only. You cannot be distracted for one moment. And I think the last 18 months made him what he is today, away from all the politics of the game.
And I remember we had Pádraig, the great Pádraig Harrington.
He did
75 minutes with us one day here. I think it was supposed to be a 3-minute phone call. But one of the most memorable things he said, Jerry, he said, it's going to happen now, thankfully, any young person thinking of getting into golf, please get into golf, get into pitching, but do whatever you, but please also take up a team sport as well, because of that point you've just made, that golf can be a very lonely game. You can be, you're your own worst critic, aren't you? The names golfers, I don't play, but the name golfers call themselves is beyond belief. When they miss a putt, but take up a team. Did Rory? Is there what background in Hollywood? Is there a GAA team? I know he went to schools where there were GAA teams. I don't know if he ever played.
Yeah, I think he played. I think he certainly played football. I don't know where he played GAA, but he certainly played the football and rugby. I'm not sure about his rugby background either. But I don't think he would have had much time, because at the age of 9, he was totally dedicated to golf. And to get that good, Joe, you've got to practice every day. You have no time to play anything else.
And Jerry,
but I do agree with Pádraig. You should take the young people. There's not going to be many McIlroys in the world.
Yeah,
you know, I know a 9-year-old now at the moment who is almost as good as Rory was at 9. But there's no guarantee that he's going to grow up to be a Rory McIlroy. It happens once in every 3 or 4 generations, and not necessarily from Ireland.
But the other thing in that brilliant clip with you and him is, and I've tweeted it there on at Joe Liveline, the other brilliant piece is he has the chipper in his hand, and he's bouncing the ball as if it's a hurley. He's flicking. It's brilliant.
Have you ever tried it, Joe?
No, not. I couldn't even do it with a hurley, Jerry, let alone a chipper.
Well, I've been playing golf for 50 years, Joe, and to stand 10 yards off a washing machine and try and put the ball in is damn near impossible, and to balance it on the blade of the club is just magic. It's like a circus act. He's very special. But what he has achieved, Joe, is unbelievable. Yeah. You know, he's only the sixth person in the whole history of golf to achieve the Grand Slam. I now say he's achieved the Grand Slam, plus there's an Aussie Open, so he's won all the Grand Slams.
Brilliant. There's an Aussie Open. That's what you play that night. And by the way, I know UTV is essentially no longer, but the company that bought them have been on saying, is there any sight or sound of that washing machine?
I want to do a documentary on it. I want to find it. Somebody showed me one and I said, no, there's no ball indent on it. That can't be it. So I'm on the hunt for the washing machine.
Great. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, Joe. Yeah. Thank you. Very, very well. Very well indeed.
You've had such a long career and it's ongoing in radio. You had a health scare a few years ago. That's okay, isn't it? Please God. Touch wood.
I had what did you say?
Did you not have a health scare a few years ago? I read in one interview.
I still had it. In 2016, I developed bladder cancer.
Okay.
And they got it then, but it came back this year, earlier this year. And they've got it again, thank goodness.
Well done.
And I'm now clear, so I'm very blessed and very, very lucky.
Good lad. And I know the last time we were chatting socially, your two daughters were, I think they're living in Dublin. Are they not based in Dublin?
One of them is based in the East. My daughter Sarah is based in the East.
Okay.
Her daughter was in the World Dancing Championships yesterday.
Brilliant.
She didn't get a recall, but she was very pleased at getting through. And my other daughter is now back in Belfast working. But I'm down in the East every other week now, for example, to see the three grandchildren.
Great to hear you. I know it's a great day for golf, and it's a great day for Ireland, and it's a great day for European golf, etc., etc. And it's a great day for decent people. It's also a great day for Northern Ireland, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah. It is indeed. Yeah. We can all unite under the Rory banner nowadays.
Well said and well finished, Jerry Kelly. Good meal, Mahoga, Jerry, and great contribution as always. And have a look at that clip. Was it 7 or 8 years after that clip that he came into his own?
He came into his own to tell you another story. After he won his first major, one Sunday afternoon, Hollywood, the club that he played out of, was playing in the Senior Cup. They were playing my club, Arglass, in the final. And Harry Diamond, who's his caddy today, his best friend, a week after Rory won his first major, he came down to Arglass, parked the car in the car park, and went out and caddied for Harry.
Ah, magic.
So that's how that friendship has evolved over the years.
That's great.
From childhood. And Harry gets a lot of stick nowadays being his caddy, and he shouldn't. He's been great for Rory over the years. Been great for him.
What a difference. Okay. Jerry, well done again. And onwards
and good
health to you, old pal.
That's
the great Jerry Kelly talking about the legendary Rory McIlroy, or Glory McIljoy, as we're calling him. Joe at RTE.ie. 51551 is a text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie in 51551. Lisa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You contacted us about the comments by the Minister of State with responsibility for mental health, and she's also Government Chief Whip, Mary Butler, where the phrase or the line I think you're objecting to is, she said, ADHD and autism seem to be where the trends are gone now. Trends may be the wrong word, she said, but at one stage when we were dealing with clinical depression, huge amounts of anxiety, suicidal ideation and self-harm, what we're seeing at the moment is a huge amount of presentations in relation to ADHD. What do you object to there, Lisa, please?
I was in Nice and I was coming home and I just heard on the radio ADHD. I can hear myself, sorry.
Grand. Okay, you're having a radio on the background, have you?
No.
Okay, we'll try and deal with that. I know it's very, it's very.
Anyway, so I was in the car and I could hear ADHD and I turned it up and I thought, oh my God, because they never speak about ADHD. So when I turned up the radio, the only word I heard was Mary Butler and trend. And I thought, trend? And I thought, if this is the minister for, sorry, Joe, I can hear myself there.
Okay, well, you hang on there, and Ruth will talk to you off air, and we'll see can we fix it up, because if it's that distressing, just to give you the lineup of what's happening later on the week. This Thursday on Liveline, we're going to be talking about GAA's unsung heroes, some of the best players from your county who could have been brilliant but never got the chance to lift the Lee McCarthy Cup or indeed the San Maguire. Damien Lawler of our sports department will be with me in studio, and we hope to hear from other experts, but we want to hear from the real oracles, our listeners, to nominate some of the heroes and indeed heroines who you think we should all remember and maybe never got the chance to should have to lift the Lee McCarthy or the San Maguire or indeed the O'Duffy Cup or the Brendan Martin Cup for women. Joe at rte.ie is a simple email, as you know, or text during the show 51551, and our WhatsApp number is 087 484 8888, 087 484 8888. Lisa back? You back, Lisa? Okay, you're coming back to me, Lisa. Here comes Lisa. Are you back, Lisa?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you there.
Okay, you're not getting the feedback in your ear, are you?
No, that's good. I just couldn't, you know, you can't concentrate when you can hear yourself talking.
Okay, well done. Okay. Yeah, so you're listening to the radio, you heard AJ and the word
trend. Yeah, so I was listening to the radio in the car, and I was on with you there before in October. And 2023. But anyway, when I was in the car, I could hear ADHD, and I thought, oh my God, brilliant. They're actually saying something about it on the radio. And then, because Mary Butler has actually emailed me through a TD to say there would be clinics in Kildare and Wicklow. And I thought, oh, this is the announcement. This is what's going to happen. Mm. We're going to have, you know, these clinics are going to be open. She's going to say when and where. And to be fair, all I could hear was the word trend. And I thought, so Dr. Sarah Carty was on as well. She was just on after, and I turned it up because I was really interested to hear what she said. But the only word that stuck in my brain was trend.
Well, then what did you hear? You thought that was, this is my word.
What I could get from it was that, oh, everybody's going now because this is a trend. So everyone's going to go and get tested because it's a trend. And I thought, what a blow. What a blow to people like myself that's been 25 years misdiagnosed. For them people out there that have no, there's no services in Kildare. No services. Mm. And then for her to say that this is a trend.
She said she was told recently by a consultant psychiatrist leading the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, CAMHS, those teams, that ADHD represented between 50 and 70% of their referrals. That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, but like, why is she called? If you think there's something wrong with you, you're not going to go and say, oh, look, it's the latest trend. I'll go and I'll see can I good find point, some help? Yeah. And you're not going to go and try and find help to say, oh, I want to be the latest trend. Because I tell you what, living with ADHD, I don't want to be in that trend, if that's what she's calling
it. Well, tell us your story then, Lisa, how you were. I was there. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Joe, I was told if I could shut you up, then there's something wrong with me. There's definitely something wrong with me from the show I was on the last time.
Right, but you're well done.
Anyway, so I was on the show there a while ago, in October last year. So
okay.
Things just got so bad, I didn't want to be here. I just didn't want to exist. I didn't want to be on this planet. I thought, what is the point in living? So my mother said, look, let's get help, we'll go and get private help. When I couldn't get the private help, and they said it'd be 6 months and then it's all online. I don't know if you remember me on the show, but mm-hmm. It was 1,600 or something like that, and the waiting list was six months.
Wow.
And then like that, ADHD doc, they came in and they said that they would help me. I know, I need to take a breath. So yeah, anyway, When they called me, I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't mm-hmm. believe I was getting the help that I needed. So I went out and I actually was nervous going in, thinking, I hope I have it. I hope now they believe me. I hope they believe I have it. Well, she said, even when I'd done the test, she said she's never even seen anyone react to me the way they'd done the test with me. And then I met with Dr. Sarah Carty herself, which, like, Joe, I'm not messing. You actually saved my life. Mm. Like, I actually don't know why I'd be here only for you and sorry, I get upset, but ADHD doc and Sarah Carter, you actually saved my life.
Well, you did in the end. But tell us how. Tell us the difference.
Step forward.
Tell us the difference that Sarah made.
So anyway, I got started. I was the fourth day of the start of the medication was on the January the 10th. I'll never forget it. So I had to take a. Oh, this is very, I'm getting a bit emotional. Mm-hmm. But I had to take an 18 concerto, which is, you know, an 18. So one of my clients came and I said, I'm going to take this. And all of a sudden, everything, I took it. And about 5-10 minutes later, I just couldn't believe the silence.
Mm-hmm. And what did you take again, Lisa?
I couldn't believe the silence. Like, I'm trying to do what I could feel, which was silence.
Okay.
My brain just stopped. I was waxing her eyebrows. I remember just looking at my hand, going for the spatula and thinking, why? I could hear the clock. Mm. I could see my hand. I was going for one thing. And that's all I could do was just literally focus on that one thing instead of thinking of about a billion other things and what I have to do later and what I have to do.
Yeah.
You know, like the it just was one machine, thing I could focus on.
Yeah.
I was going to go to the gym. I thought, you know what? I was raged about not having coffee. Made a decaf coffee, sat there for 2 hours, guilt-free, sitting, relaxing. I couldn't believe I was stopped for two. I couldn't believe I was actually sitting there and there was no racing thoughts. There was no thinking I'm nothing, thinking I shouldn't be here. There was no, it was just silence.
And you could
silence.
You could live in the moment.
I just thought, does everyone else think like this? Is everybody else like this? Is everybody else's mind not racing? Is this what it's like? I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe the difference that made to me. So you're talking now, or I'm on it now a year and a half. I gave up alcohol. Mm-hmm. I gave it a chance because I thought I want to give this a chance. My whole life is completely different. I have a different home, like I have a different mindset. Do you know, I just have a complete, listen, life is not amazing. Life is not, I'm not going to say it's amazing, but I can cope. I can cope now. I can actually cope. I have tools of how I can cope with life much better since I've been diagnosed with ADHD. But the thing what got me on Saturday, I'll be honest with you, I'm not wanting to exist for the Minister of Health to turn around and say that this is a trend when people are literally wanting to not exist. How dare she? She owes the public an apology. She owes parents an apology. She owes the like of my mother an apology. She owes parents of children out there that know there's something not right. I've had people up and down the country, Joe, since your show. I've had people saying that, oh, I relate to her. My daughter relates to her. I set up a Facebook page because like that, I'm not a psychologist. I just couldn't cope.
Gosh, yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of emails are coming to me and hundreds of people were messaging me privately. I got a message this morning off, literally only this morning. She didn't even know I was going onto the show and she said, she's heartbroken. She's looking at her daughter. That way my mother looked at me, that there's no help, there's no hope, there should be help, and there's none. And Mary Butler still hasn't got back to me. I voted for the first time in my life because I thought I don't want to be a hypocrite. And the two politicians, because I have a good network, they voted for them and they got in. I still haven't heard from them too. Mm. Nothing. I even said on Saturday, I said, I'm going to go on to Joe Duffy. You know, I'm not allowed to say their name. That's fine. But the two of them haven't came near me since. I was told I'd go up to the Dáil and say my story. And basically, the politicians have done nothing. And there's still no services in Kildare Town. And there's a huge demand. Because I can tell you now, I get hundreds of mails a day.
Okay, let's add, because yesterday on the This Week programme on here on RT Radio 1, Dr. Lorcan Martin, who's president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, and he said ADHD diagnosis can cross over with many different diagnoses. We certainly are seeing more children with ADHD. There's no doubt about that. There is a growing awareness, he said, of ADHD in general, which would naturally lead to increased diagnosis. Sometimes a child or person may get assessed for ADHD before getting assessed for other things. And we've asked, is it being overdiagnosed? And because you know, there's been a recent book.
Yeah, but Joe, if you have a broken leg, you go into the hospital because you've a leg that's broke to get fixed. Yeah. If you think you've got something wrong with you, or you think your child has something, then you'll go to the doctor. You'll go to the right person. So the right person will be a psychiatrist, even though I done a test. I rang ADHD Ireland myself there a while ago, and I said I need help for I
got a fright because someone answered a helpline. Of ADHD. I actually got a fright because they finally answered me in ADHD Ireland.
Well, there is a growing debate around this. There's an Irish medic, I think she was on with Brendan there at the weekend, Dr. Suzanne, she's a new book out, and she's been interviewed in a number of papers, and the headline is an Irish doctor on why she believes autism, ADHD and depression are being over-diagnosed. So there is a debate. Are we living in the... It's a bit written by Rona McGreevy. Are we living in the age of over-medicalisation? Irish-born doctor, Dr. Suzanne O'Sullivan, a consultant neurologist based in London, has written... It's a book called The Age of Diagnosis, which challenges the increase in diagnosis in conditions such as autism, ADHD and long COVID. Now, you're saying your diagnosis, Lisa... Made all the difference to you, knowing
my diagnosis changed my life. My diagnosis saved my life.
Mm-hmm. And did your
it didn't change it? It saved it.
Did your diagnosis? What did that mean? Did it mean medication? Did it mean CBT?
Yeah, so I'm actually on the highest medication you can be on.
Okay.
Daily.
Okay.
Now, like I was talking to your the guy earlier on. Even he was saying that, like, look, some people might not need medication, but you're not going to go to the doctor if you don't want medication. You're not going to go to the doctor if you don't. Honestly, like, what are you going to do? Go, oh, listen, I'm in here for a broken leg, but don't put a cast on it. So if you're going to go and get a diagnosis, you know there's something not right.
Yeah, and it's different for different people. But again, controversially, as always, in a very well argued way, whatever you agree or disagree, Brenda Power, in yesterday's Sunday Times, takes up this whole issue of that was raised by Mary Butler, and indeed is raised by this Irish doctor in her new book. Brenda said it was reported last week that there's been a surge in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, obviously, diagnosis in children, such as to put enormous pressure on CAMHS, the child and adolescent mental health services, as we know. Up to 70% of referrals to one CAMHS team in Cork are due to ADHD, according to Mary Butler, the Minister of State for Mental Health. ADHD and autism seem to be where, she's quoting Mary Butler, seem to where the trends are now, she said, adding, which I read out already, but just remind people what she did say. Trends, said the minister, may be the wrong word, but at one stage we were dealing with clinical depression, huge amounts of suicidal ideation, self-harm. What we're now seeing at the moment is a huge amount of presentations in relation to ADHD. And Brenda Power writes, is trends really the wrong word? Or is it possible that the phenomenon of identity politics demands that everyone have a label? Is it possible that children who do not identify with some modern condition, now she's talking about children, obviously, Lisa, do not identify with some modern condition or other, an allergy, an intolerance, non-binary, trans, inattentive, hyperactive, dyslexic, dyspraxic, dyscalculic, which is can't do maths, dysgraphic, struggle with handwriting, are now the odd ones out? Are parents being encouraged, wrote Brenda Power, by a sort of social contagion to have their kids investigated for some condition at the hint of a distinguishing feature? Are the experts they consult so fearful of dismissing parental concerns that instead of reassuring them with shyness, naughtiness, dreaminess or whatever, that all that is normal, they dispatch them with the diagnosis they require? Now, that all finishes with a question mark. In other words, she's saying it quite clearly. Would there be a bit of parental pressure here to get a diagnosis, Lisa, on children?
She's saying there that it was already a sword in depression, because of course it was, because all they give out is pills for depression. That's all I got for years, pills for depression. So of course, it was a sword back then because that's all they reported. Everything you go in for is depression and schizophrenia and all of these and bipolar. Of course, it was a sword then. Then it's coming out now. Like, not now, obviously not now. But it's like there is one doctor, I'm not allowed to say it, his name either. But thank God, since my show, it's now going to be, thank God that I think now, he did say to me next year and he said to me he'd be on my podcast. So, oh, please God, he is. But that's only one doctor I know of. But he's even saying now, I know for a fact, actually, that he's taken people off antidepressants. He's taken people off all these antischizophrenia.
And we know there is.
Actually, you have ADHD. Yeah, so even doctors are agreeing with that this is the problem. Hmm. So there's the whole reports are going by what they were already being misdiagnosed with. And me.
Whatever,
so now you're getting a thing going, okay, well, like I said, up and down the country since I was on your show, people related to me and they're all saying, oh, I know someone that has, my daughter has that. You know what I mean? And then like that, there is a huge, like there's Facebook, I'm at the setting one up. There's actually Facebook there to support women like myself, late diagnosis. I know there's other, like there's children and stuff like that, but the one I support, I'm at the setting up is for women. But like I said, there was that much people looking for help off me, which I am not a psychiatrist. I set this page up. That page is like ongoing with people saying, I need help, I need help. And it's heartbreaking listening to all these people that need help, and there's none.
Well, one thing that has been started, as you and you're such a contributor to it, such a strong one as well, in so many ways, Lisa, is a discussion about, and you've raised some very serious points there today, Lisa. I'm glad to hear that.
Can I just say one more thing, though? Yeah. I'll just say about Mary Butler as well. I'll just say she put a light on the amount of misinformation thrown around. Okay. Very uneducated to say a word like that. She owes us an apology.
Well, she did actually.
But listen, I want to thank you, Joe. I want to thank you from the bottom of my soul for saving my life.
It's your own work.
You started it. And now look at the awareness you're bringing now. I know she said a stupid thing, but look, we're all talking about it, thank God. And please, God, there's going to be help.
And Mary Butler says that she clarified what she meant, and she's been.
Did she give an apology?
We'll ask her for an apology. Okay, Lisa, thanks indeed. Thanks indeed.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay.
Thanks, take care.
And she did. She did clarify. She said she was speaking about recent data trends. And she, for her full remarks, that she was addressing the reality that ADHD presentations now represent a significant part. At no point did the minister invalidate the diagnosis of young people diagnosed with ADHD or CAMS. Okay, joe@rte.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Brendan is in Galway. Brendan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
I'm okay. You sent us in this photograph. Now, I know there's no permanent damage, but it's of your head.
Yeah. Mainly the back of my head, Joe, yeah.
And it looks like, to use that awful old ivory, it looks like you've been dragged through a hedge backwards.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, tell us what happened.
So what happened was I think it's fair to say I'm a bit thin on top. I'm as bald as a couch. But I like to keep my head shaved, you know. So there a few months ago, my wife Patricia bought me a brand new razor. So I thought, great, I'll try that. So I shaved my head one morning as normal, and that day it was fine. There was no problem, and I went to bed that night. And then the next morning I got up kind of early because I'd be working early, and I got up at about 6:15. And the next thing, after I heard Trish say from the bedroom, she said, "What happened to you?" You know, so I went down anyway, and my side of the bed, or the pillowcase in particular, was covered in blood.
Wow.
You know, it was like a murder scene. So anyway, we didn't know what happened. So she looked at me and she couldn't really see anything. But then, as that day went on, I noticed, you know, my head was getting a bit sore. And by that evening, you could see then, like you see in the photograph there, you could see all the kind of scars forming on the back of me on the back of my head. It was on the top of my head as well, but mainly the back of my head, you know. So over the next few days then, it got, you know, it got very, very sore, and my head got really kind of tight, you know, as if my head had been boiled, you know. So and I couldn't wear a hat. I couldn't bear to put anything over it, so I couldn't wear a hat or anything, you know. So it looked terrible, you know. Anybody who's seen it was wondering exactly what happened to me, you know. I'd have been, you know.
But when you were shaving your head, Brendan, did you not feel scratches and?
Oh no!
No, you felt nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And even for that day, the first day, I felt nothing. It felt, you know, felt nice and smooth. It was grand, you know.
And I've tweeted the photograph there during the break, Joe. Yeah. And brace yourself. Now, I also said, by the way, in the piece that you're okay now, but I felt I had to say it because when people saw it, when you saw the photograph of the back of your head, what did you think?
I was shocked because obviously I couldn't see it.
It's terrible,
you know. But I couldn't see it. But then, so she took the photograph then, and showed it to me. And then I was shocked because I was kind of walking around, you know, oblivious to it until I seen the photograph, you know. So then I was shocked. But then, as the next couple of days went on, it was sore, you know, and very uncomfortable, you know.
We might hear from them, 51551, other men who shave their heads for whatever reason, for cosmetic reasons. We know for some people it's for medical reasons, but for, say, cosmetic reasons, or they, as you say yourself, you were thin on top, so you decided to go the whole... Did you think, if you decided to go the whole hog, you thought you would look better? I don't mean that in an immodest way, Brendan.
Yeah, for me, personally, yeah, I'd prefer it without, you know. I mean, I'm not, like, if I let it grow, it'd grow, you know, maybe around the side or the back of my head, you know, but I wouldn't, I just know I couldn't bear that myself, you know. But that's just me, I suppose. Everybody would have their own kind of...
Reasons, yeah.
Preference or whatever, yeah, but I just prefer it to be completely,
So
as smooth as I can get it, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So what went wrong?
I have no idea, Joe, because I shaved my head the same as I've done, I'd say, 1,000 times before. You know, there was nothing different. I used the same, you know, shaving foam or whatever that I did, you know. Now, the only thing is, since it's, I've abandoned shaving my head.
Oh, have you?
My daughter actually bought me, my daughter bought me a really nice electric machine that does the job pretty much just as good as the razors anyway, you know.
But Brendan, when you investigated or decided a number of years ago that you were going to shave the head, surely you asked for advice. Do you get someone else to do it? Your partner or a barber or whatever, is it recommended that you sit there? I don't know whether you're sitting in front of a mirror or not, and run the razor backways from the forehead backwards or from the neck upwards. Like, is there a knack in shaving your head?
Not really. You get used to it in time. You know, the first few times, all right. The first few times, all right. I remember I'd shave it and I'd be missing bits. Yeah, you know, so I'd have kind of stripes of hair, you know. And but then after a few times, you know, you get used to it. So even though I know you're shaving the back of your head, so there's no point looking in the mirror, but you just get to know. You just kind of rub your hand over it and make sure you kind of get all of it, you know. Now it's much easier now that I use the electric
when you're rubbing your hand over your bald head, your shaved head, are you looking for complete snooker ball smoothness? Or would you live with stubble?
Oh no, smooth if you can. Smooth if you can. Yeah, there's nothing worse than feeling a bit. Yeah, you'd
stubbly.
Sometimes you'd shave your head, and then as the day went on, you might rub your head, and you'd feel a bit, and you'd say, "Oh God, you know, that'll look."
And when you, I know you've adopted a different method since the disaster, but how often would you have to shave your head? Back in the old days.
Not every day, but you'd have to do it. You'd have to do it a few days a week. You know, maybe 3 days a week. You know, but you kind of get good at it after a while, and it's pretty quick. You know, it's just like, I suppose, you know, you'd be shaving anyway. You know, so you just maybe shave. So you know, it might take you 5 minutes or whatever. That's all. You know, it's not a It's not
now, who did anyone else see this image of your head? I know you were fine and you've recovered.
Oh yeah. Well, see, I had to I drive a school bus, so I had to go to work. You know, I had to bring the kids to school, but they were very quiet. for a couple of mornings, you know, because I'd say they were sitting in the bus looking at this head in front of them, say, you know, what happened? What that fella, you know? So, but they were grand. They're quiet anyway, but they were grand, you know, when I explained what happened, you know. But a lot of, like, I'd normally go swimming every morning then after I finish work,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
in the pool.
Yeah, brilliant.
I couldn't. Oh, God, no.
Why?
It wouldn't be fair. Well, it wouldn't be fair to go in. I couldn't go into the pool covered in, you know, covered in cars. Like I said, I couldn't bear to wear the swimming cap anyway, you know, so...
Because of the cuts.
Yeah.
And how long, because the skin on your cranium can be very thin, tissuey sometimes, the older you get. How long did it take to heal?
It was 4 weeks, really, before it kind of went away, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. It was slow enough until it, you know, fully went away. And
were you worried?
I was kind of worried that...
Yeah.
Well, I was kind of worried about infection, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
The only thing is now Trish looked after it pretty well, you know. So I was lucky in that regard, you know.
Well, did you dab it with antiseptic or Vaseline or did you have to do anything?
Oh yeah. We had to put. I know she put different types of, you know, antiseptic cream and that on it, you know, and there was other cream as well, you know, that she put on it to keep it, you know, to kind of keep it kind of moisturized as well, you know, because it was really. It got really dry, you know. It got unbearably dry for a few weeks afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
But thankfully now it's kind of back to normal, you know.
But as I say, I've tweeted it. But just be, if you're anyway squeamish, though, the good news is you're fine. You're fine now. Brendan, have you heard of other people, other men, obviously, who shaved their head, having similar experiences?
Well, I haven't actually, and that's what I was just wondering, like, as you know, has this happened to anybody else, or was I just unlucky, you know, or has anybody suffered the same? I know anybody shaving anytime, you'll always get maybe
nick
or whatever, you know, but...
The shaving nick that a man can get, which a barely discernible nick... can produce, especially on the chin, can produce an enormous amount of blood, a frightening amount of blood, an unstoppable amount of blood.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's why it was so bad, especially that first, you know, the first morning when Trish seen that.
Okay,
the
but you're, case, you know, you're fully, you're recovered now.
Yeah.
And what age were you, to use your own phrase, when you started realising you were thinning out?
Oh, I'd say when I was younger, I had a fine head of hair, and I thought it would last forever, you know. But unfortunately, so I'd say probably late 30s, and then it was thinning out, and then I was cutting it. I was cutting it short, and then one day I just decided that's it. I'm just going to shave it anyway, because it'd grow back if it looked terrible, you know. But no, I decided to stick with it then. So that's about 20 years ago now that I've been...
Okay, doing it.
I'm in my 60s now, so...
John Howard is in Clondalkin in Dublin, 51551 Joe at rt.ie, 0818715815. John, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you? How's things?
Did you see the photograph?
I did, yeah. I never had that. Now, I shave my head twice a day, Joe.
Okay.
In the morning and again in the evening. I use a handheld. It just fits in the palm of your hand. I could name the brand if you want.
Yeah, too. We live in a commercial world, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Remington RX-7 model.
Okay.
Now, I'm not employed by Remington.
I know,
don't benefit from it. Yeah. But I've always used it. I've always gone for the RX-7.
Okay. So you don't use a blade? You don't use
No, okay. No. I use this. It's five blades on it.
Wow. Okay.
And I find it great for comfort.
And why twice a day, John?
I just feel better because of it, Joe. I've always had short hair.
Okay.
And now I'm in my 60s now, and I don't like a head of hair on myself.
Do you not?
No.
Why?
Completely bald. Cleaner. but could easier you... to manage. Okay. I could, Joe. It grows an alarming rate. Frightens me how it grows if I don't shave.
So it could be, if you wanted to, what's it now? It's April. By the end of June, you could have a, you could be like John Lennon.
I could. I'm bald by design, not by nature.
Okay. And what do you, what you don't, obviously, you, it's more hygienic, I presume.
Yeah.
It's quicker.
Easier to manage. It's less troublesome. It's less to bother me.
It's quicker when you have your shower or whatever you.
Yeah. Great comfort. I get great comfort in it.
Yeah. And what do those, what do those around you think?
No comments, nothing
okay,
really. No.
Okay.
No.
Now,
you know, it's the nature bald by nature. And what about, I'm bald by design, so
What about cold? What about the temperature, especially in Ireland?
I wear a hat, Joe.
You have to think about the sun as well, haven't you?
The other way round.
Have you met many men in the I shave my head deliberately club?
No, I have met a lot of men my own age in their 60s, Joe, with comb overs.
Okay.
And it's embarrassing and I'm never going to end up like that.
Yeah.
You know, now I could grow a full head of hair if I wanted to, but I just don't want it. I want it all off. And I do shave twice a day.
And you, but you're saying, well, what I'm hearing is, if you let it grow for a week, for whatever reason, you had a cut on your head and you couldn't shave, you'd get annoyed with a week's growth.
It would irritate me.
Yeah. Okay, stay there, John. Brian is in Wexford. Yeah. Brian.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Are you a member of the Deliberately Bald Head Club?
I am indeed, Joe. I am indeed. Yes, indeed. It started many years ago when I cut my hair fairly short, you know.
Yeah.
And I used a kind of a four blade, then I used a two blade and got really short, and I kind of liked it. And then I used a one blade, and then one day I shaved it with a soap and water. And it's,
okay.
And I started doing it for about the last 20 years, maybe more. I've been shaving it twice a week with Mac 3 Red soap and water. And and then on the other occasion, I tried to let it grow out again, and it kind of irritates me when I do that.
Okay.
So I stick with it, you know. So now, up to this day, I'm of a certain vintage now, and I shave it twice a week, and I like it smooth.
And I'll ask John the same question. Brian, do you want it snooker ball smooth, or you'll take a stubbly wheat field?
Mostly snooker ball smooth.
Okay.
My son and daughter bought me a razor at Christmas year, just gone out. One of these head rip for shaving the head, you know.
Yeah, like the last one.
And I use that about three or four times a week now, and it's really good, you know. It keeps it down, you know.
And John Horne, John, the same question, snooker ball or stubby Weefield?
Snooker ball.
Yeah,
stubby would be very irritating. It would annoy me, so it's definitely snooker ball.
And would you grow a beard, John?
I have a little moustache, Joe, but I keep that very well trimmed. It's very well trimmed. It's very noticeable.
Okay, Brian, would you grow a beard?
I did grow a beard a few years ago, but I didn't shave it off. Now it's all, I had a really good system one time. I used to shave in the shower, right?
Yeah. So
I'd be in the shower, no mirror needed, but God, by feel, I'd feel the head and I'd shave it all out. And I have it done really, I got that used to it. I used to be able to do it fairly fast, you know? So I still do that on the other occasion now, you know?
Okay. Michael Roach is in Cork. Michael, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you, bye?
Good. You're all good, Michael. Yeah. Are you, by choice, a bald-headed shaver man, or you had to?
By choice. No, okay. Look, it was tinning out all right. I'm 59 now, so I got around 30, and then the top part started to tin out, so I said, I'm not going to be able to hack this sideburn crap now at all, like, you know, so I said take it all off. But I think I have a very good bald head for a bald head.
Okay, as bald heads go. And have you assist them many times, day, weekly, fortnightly?
No, I didn't. I wouldn't have fast growth, no.
Okay.
But what I do is, and I'm listening to the lads there, I've cut my head a few times, you know. But what I find is that I use the blades now that the young lads would be starting off with, and I would be doing it every 2 days, you know, because I wouldn't have fast growth, like. But what I do is, like, the training blades, they won't cut you.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
What's a even though I shave every day, sometimes twice a day, what's a shaving blade? What's a training blade? Sorry.
Do you know, we say when the young lads, like 13 or 14, and they're starting to shave, they get these start off shaving blades, or I just call them training blades, you know. But that's what I buy. I think, they're disposable. You'd have one shave and then you throw it away.
The big ones are whatever,
but it doesn't, they won't cut your head, like, you know what I mean? Well, they don't cut my head anyway, you know.
Michael, have you seen the photograph of Brendan that we tweeted?
I didn't, but
Don't.
No, I won't. But he's right in what he's saying. If you cut your head, you won't feel it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Didn't know that.
Until you start wiping it.
Yeah.
And then you see the blood, you know?
Good God. And I can hear, Michael, you're a sensitive soul. So I'm asking you not to look at a photograph of Brendan.
No, I wouldn't. I've had enough cuts, you know? But I tell you something. The women love bald snooker heads, boy.
Are you
serious? They absolutely love it.
And what, they just,
100%, yeah.
They just about just love caressing it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I have to say, like, even if I didn't shave now for about 3 days, it feels like a dirty mat on your head, the stubble.
Yeah.
And I just have to get it off, like. And when you have a wet shave then and you put on the aloe vera, I tell you something, boy, it's incredible.
You're telling me, Michael, from Cork, that you're now on the aloe vera and you're prepared to boast about that on the national airways.
Well, I didn't. There's a lot of different types. I won't give you the specific name, you know.
So, Michael Roach, by the way, the guys, if you do have a local, you sit in with your pint of Murphy's or Beamish. Michael Roach uses Dalavira. And far from aloe vera, you are rare, Michael. Stay with us, will you? Stay with us. Noel Manning. Noel.
Yes, Joe, how are you?
Do you shave by choice or you have to? Your head?
I have to, Joe. About my late 40s, I started losing my hair a bit, so I decided to go full commando as such. So I wet shave twice, three times a week.
Okay.
And I have a beard, so it's not a complete...
And, well, okay, so if you're shaving two or three times a week, that means it's growing. Why won't you let it grow?
No, I just like I would have hair along at the side of my head, on the back of my head, and such. But I decided no, I just keep it off completely. Yeah, I'm quite happy with that, and it feels good, just like that chap.
Okay,
saying.
And when you
I
get
don't put aloe vera on it, but yeah,
I know
that's just
the Cork fellas. They're gone soft. They're gone soft in the head. They're on the aloe vera. Noel, would you if you are you snooker ball or are you stubbly wheat field?
Snooker ball.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't that amazing?
Much better.
And you'd get you'd say to yourself after two or three days, it'd be like your fingernails, you have to cut for the feeling it gives you.
Like I shaved yesterday, I didn't shave today, but if I was going out later this evening or tomorrow or something like that, I would shave, a wet shave, just an ordinary two-blade razor. It wouldn't be an electric one, I wouldn't usually use because I don't get a good cut from it.
Yeah,
I feel I still have a little bit of stubble.
Yeah. And do you care to comment on the survey that Michael Roach of Cork has done, where he believes his beautifully snooker ball smooth head is more appreciated by members of the opposite sex?
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
Would
my
you?
Wife
okay.
loves it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And Michael, is that a survey you did below in Cork or just Is this anecdotal?
No.
Okay.
No, I intend, you know, the majority of women, they love a bald head. They won't tell you, but you know, if you're talking to them, by they're lamping the top of your head, okay, and they're shining on your head is the better for them.
Oh, beautiful. And would any of them ever say to you, sir, would you mind if I had a little rub?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're open. Are you, generally, are you open to that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I wouldn't want them chewing up. Like,
No. That brings too much attention, seriously. But you could. So put your hand on your head now, Michael.
Yeah, well, it needs to be done there now. So I'm
okay.
So
tell me what you're feeling. Seriously, give me the sensation.
I can feel a bit of stubble there now, and on the sides now. All right, it'll be a bit more, you know.
Okay.
But the reason I put on the aloe vera, Joe, is because your head will dry out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like, and when it dries out, there's only one thing that's going to happen, and it's going to get itchy.
Yeah, of course.
And like, you know, with you have a hat in on you and stuff like that, it just gets worse. Because you'll have to wear a hat in the winter.
Of course, yeah, I wear a hat on. Brendan, put your hand on your head.
Oh, yeah, I actually was, Joe, yeah.
What are you feeling at the moment? Are you stubbly or smooth?
If you follow smooth enough.
Okay,
yeah,
John Horan in Clondalkin, and put your hand to your head.
Yeah, right, Joe, yeah.
And what are we feeling?
Oh, super sexy.
Noel Manning. Noel Manning.
Yes, Joe.
Put your hand to your head, and what are we feeling?
Oh, smooth.
Oh, God.
Smooth, Joe.
Oh, God, I'm
all right. By the way, I put Nivea cream on, which is not cheaper than aloe vera. Yeah.
And what about, would any of you come in one at a time? Noel, do you ever go for a head massage?
No, I did treat myself many years ago to a shave in a barber's. But I had to let my hair grow for at least a week and a half to 2 weeks.
To get your money's worth.
To get the benefit of it.
Yes. John Horan, a head massage, John. Would you?
No, only after Edmonton.
Okay. Brendan in Galway. A head massage.
No, head massage. No, definitely not.
Michael, you're probably on two head massages a week, are you at this rate, Michael?
No, I'm not, Joe. But, you know, you get these little things there. The kids will wear them there at Christmas. You know, it's like a springy thing with a lot of prongs on the top of it, and you can just put it on the top of your head.
Oh, we know it, yes.
And, you know, you push it down, yeah. I find them very good.
Okay.
But if I would, I must do the head shave in the barber. I must do that.
Yeah,
but I'd also like an Indian head massage, because I said those lads and girls would be very good as well.
That would be good. Okay. Well, they are grey heads anyway. Four talking heads: Michael Roach, Brendan, John Horn, Noel Manning, it's very popular, very popular. Okay. Good evening, my good Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Aileen, good afternoon. The discussion about ADHD, and it's raised in different ways by a number of people. Is it being overdiagnosed? Your contribution, please, Aileen.
Thanks, Joe. I just heard the end of the last piece about the ADHD, and I just felt compelled to ring in. I'm a woman in her late 40s.
Yeah.
I was diagnosed about 2 years ago, and it has been life-changing. My husband also has an ADHD diagnosis, and all four of our children have it too. So we're told that's not abnormal. There's a strong genetic component. So comments like that about it being overdiagnosed or being a trend are hurtful. And they can be damaging as well to people, because you could have people out there who are thinking it could be them, and then they hear something like that and they think, oh, well, maybe I'm just jumping on the bandwagon.
So tell us what the diagnosis, the difference it made to you and your family.
It's hard to describe, Joe. If you don't have ADHD, it's very difficult to describe it to somebody and then to see the difference afterwards. But I know people around me would definitely notice the difference. It is night and day.
Okay.
I know when I was first diagnosed and I decided I'd try medication, the doctor asked me what my biggest fear about was. And I said, was that I would take it and nothing would change. I would still feel the same. And he said, look, I don't think that's going to happen. And it didn't. I took it and immediately I could feel the difference. It is the ability to focus. It's the ability to take in information, process it, to start doing a task and actually complete it, to be able to just go about in the world without constantly hopping from one thought to another, from one thing to the other, and never actually able to achieve things because you can't just... And it's nearly like a physical block that you can't physically make yourself do something. It just... There's a disconnect between your brain and your body. And the medication kind of closes that gap. And it's so hard to describe. I think the first time I kind of started medication and felt this, like my brain was very quiet, and I've heard other people saying that too. It was, you know, I was telling somebody about it and they were like looking at me going, but that's what your brain's supposed to feel like. That's what your inner monologue shouldn't be, you know, 10 different radio stations all blasting full volume at the same time.
Which is the way Lisa described it as well, in fairness. And then was the diagnosis for your family, the children and your husband, did they, what was the treatment of Annie in their case?
Well, it started with the kids. So my eldest son was diagnosed first. And then as the other kids got older and started school and we started to see similar behaviours and talk to the school and they said, yeah, we think there's an issue, and would have brought them for assessments as well through CAMHS. The idea that it's overdiagnosed, I find very funny as well, because it is very difficult to get an assessment and a diagnosis in this country. It's not something you can just walk into the doctor and say, I think I have this, and they say, yeah, probably grand, and... You know, here's your diagnosis and your prescription. Off you go. It is really difficult. So I don't know where they have this idea that people are just running around willy nilly getting diagnoses. For us, when the kids were diagnosed and going through that process, and it is a long enough process. It's definitely not something that's rushed either. We were filling out the forms and the questionnaires and the surveys and the interviews, and then kind of realizing as time was going on that. A lot of this stuff was resonating for us personally, you know, and reflecting back on us as ourselves as children and even how we were as adults, and realising that that could possibly be the issue. And I would have spoken to the children's doctors and they said, yeah, it's very common. They would see it for children to be assessed and diagnosed and for the parents to have that light bulb moment and go on ahead and then go through the assessment. So it's certainly not a unique thing.
But if there's six people in your family been diagnosed with ADHD, I presume the treatment isn't the same for everybody, is it?
No.
Okay.
No. We would have, you know, you go through trials of medication. Sometimes you don't need medication. One of my sons is not currently on medication because he's in transition year and he didn't feel he needed it this year because there was so much activity and he didn't need to sit and focus kind of for long periods of time. Different medications suit different people. One of my kids can't take medication because it has side effects for another condition she has. So, like, it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all. It's trial and error, and sometimes there's a lot of error before you find what suits you. And there's also ADHD Ireland offer a brilliant thing. It's UMAP, and I would have done it through college, UniMAP, and it's a 6-week course for people with ADHD, and it teaches you a lot about your ADHD and management tricks and sort of, you know, ideas about how to help yourself.
Stay with us, Aileen. Mary, your daughter was diagnosed when she was 16 after a misdiagnosis.
She was actually diagnosed at the age of 21.
Okay.
Having been diagnosed with depression at the age of 16, 17.
That's what I mean, yeah.
And put on antidepressants. And they, basically, they were ineffective and they caused a lot of harm for her. Mm-hmm. And it was only with the diagnosis then of ADHD where she started, you know, she said it was like putting on a pair of glasses, turning on a light switch.
Wow.
And unfortunately, it's not just about pills.
Yeah.
It's the feelings of shame people have. You know, they have years of self-hatred for not being able to complete a task. or to, mm-hmm. you know, to get themselves together, you know, to do the things that ordinary people can do. Because she often used to say to me, how can you do that? Is your brain not at you all the time? And I'd say, no, I can just do one thing to another. You know, I can put out the line of clothes, you know, when they're washed. A person with ADHD, the completion of a task is hugely challenging for them. But then it is the shame and the self-hatred that they experience as a result of not being... Because these people are probably brighter than most ordinary people. They have the ability to do anything they want to do, but the completion of a task is holding them back. And that's why it's so sad to see, you know, young people struggling in college. A lot of people with ADHD actually don't achieve their degree, even though... Yeah, it's well known that people with ADHD... Now, my daughter did get her degree, thankfully. But it can challenge people to get a job, to... You know, even the passport is out of date. To reapply for the passport is a huge task, because you have to go and get the photo, you have to go and do this. And they'll get all the bits, they'll fill out all the forms, and the forms will never be sent in. And then
to
you
complete
see...
complete the task, yeah.
Then, oh, it is a disorder of the brain. It's where the frontal cortex isn't connected the same way as your brain and my brain is. And that's what happens when you take the medication. It helps the cogs in the brain to pull together and work as a unit. And there should be no shame from people who don't understand. All my daughter asked me, she said, is all she would like is for people to have a curiosity. You know, we don't. Yeah. They don't need the opinions of others. Oh, don't take this, don't do that, get on, get up, you're lazy, or this, you're that. They're not lazy, it's just that they can't complete a task. They may be so overwhelmed by something. So it's not an overdiagnosis. It's parents are realising that their children have great ability, they have great potential, and yet they're not able to do it. And for girls, ADHD is different for boys. The boys, you'll see them climbing the chairs or climbing the ladder, you know, climbing walls, as they say. But the girls, it's all internalised, you know. And the wrong medication is what I would be hugely, hugely concerned with. You put young people on antidepressants, and it's just, you know, it just causes other issues. Because they're not the answer.
Okay, more enlightenment. Thanks indeed from Mary and Aileen. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Coming up to Good Friday. We are on Good Friday this year for the first time, I think, in my 37 years here anyway. Liveline is on Good Friday. And you will have obviously have access to services as well, given that we're the national broadcasting station and can offer a number of platforms. But this Good Friday and Liveline, we've the end of Lent, as we know, and also Easter Sunday and Easter eggs and all that carry on. We'll be talking about the joys, now J-O-Y-S, of chocolate and sweets. We'll be joined in the studio by historian Katie Blackwood, who will take us through the illustrious history of Ireland's chocolate factories. Did you work in Cadbury? Still going strong. Probably making the best chocolate in the world because it's made from real milk, from real Irish cows, as Irish chocolate is. Did you work in Cadbury's in Coolock or Kerry? Have our chocolate tastes changed? Or maybe Cadbury's had a factory down in East Wall in Dublin up to the 1940s. Do you remember Orney's? Do you remember Orney's? Did you ever work there out in Talla? Fry's, which was a branch of Cadbury's, Roundtree's, who had a massive factory there in Inchicore in Dublin, Caffrey's with the very famous Caffrey snowball invented, and Williams and Woods's as well. They were based just off Parnell Street there in the massive building. That's now known, it's an artistic venue, it's now known as the Chocolate Factory. Okay, if you want to get involved in that, text us, 51551. Email Joe, probably the best email, joe@rte.ie, or WhatsApp anytime at 087-4848-888. Ruth Kennedy on sound, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, Owen McLaughlin, producer Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.